Glenn Elliott was a star through the 70s and had a very good career in administration since. We take on the Bombers, Jade Gresham, against St Kilda. Essendon, scratchy in a win over Hawthorn. I actually thought they looked better in the loss to Sydney than they did in the win over Hawthorn, although a very open game. They've conceded 64 scoring shots in the first 2 weeks, including 28 against the Hawthorn side that's struggling to score. And had Hawthorn a kick straight, they would have won that game in the opening round, 11-17 to 17-5 or something of that nature. Peter Wright gets suspended. Obviously, we lose Max King, we lose Liam Henry, Mason Wood, the obvious one. Brad Crouch probably would have played this week, you think, in place of Wood, but he's out as well. So then you look at potential changes. Nick and Caminiti for King seems one obvious one. Butler for Henry seems another obvious one. The third one, not so obvious, but maybe it's a Garcia or a Collard, but perhaps a Garcia gets an opportunity to provide a bit of run this week.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I think it's Caminiti for King, Garcia and Butler. I think they're the three to come in. I mean, it seems simple. I think when you don't have that many that can come in, there's a bunch of guys that just aren't ready. You know, we hear a lot about Ari and kind of his game for Sandy, but I just watching some of that game and seeing him up close and personal in that North Melbourne practice match at Moorabbin, he's so far from ready that it's not funny. And there are a bunch of other kids, you know, Keeler and Heath and those guys. You know, Ollie Hotton's exciting. Hasn't played that much footy. So I think those three are the obvious ones really for this particular situation, given the outs and you know, given who we're playing, where we're playing, that they just seem to be the obvious ones.
Sort of looking at it going, after Essendon's rucks, which they seem to have 13 of, they're not a quick team when you take away a lot. Their midfielders aren't that quick. They use a lot of the ball. They get it. They're very much a have to kick to a good spot sort of team. I feel like they're a sort of team that we could use a lot of pace and get around. And you just look back at the practice game at Moorabbin, and that's what we did. We used our pace. We ran the ball, and it made it hard for them. They were chasing tail most of the day. It was a kind of a just watching us pass them with ease. So I'm wondering, do we go in with a bit more run instead? Do we try to find, I guess, a mix that has these smaller, quicker running players and exploit that? We're still going to have Membry. We're going to have Cooper up front. We're going to have Marshall would drift back and drift up forward. And we're still going to have big targets there. Do we just bring in a little bit more speed and just run like hell that day? I think it could be a winning way to go. We saw Marshall see off two ruckmen on the weekend, so it's not like he can't do it. And yeah, if we're not winning the hit outs like we did on the weekend, just play to what they're doing. Marshall steps in as pretty well a fourth midfielder when you look at it. So it's possibly a great idea to just go small against them and just run like the wind. So
well, that small ball, I mean, to borrow a basketball phrase, that small ball kind of game did work against them last year. I know it was at the G and all that sort of stuff, but yeah, I think we had Cordy and Caminiti up front, and it was Butler and Higgins that did all the damage. Really, the taller forward's job was just to bring the ball to ground at that stage, bring the ball to ground and let the smalls do the work. And so there is some method to that type of madness, I guess.
I mean, Cordy had, from memory, in that game last year, I think he had one possession, and Caminiti didn't score, or pretty sure he didn't score, maybe one goal early. But on the most part, I think he kicked one in the first 5 minutes, maybe. But we didn't get a lot out of those two guys in terms of scoreboard influence. Mitch Owens was lively across half four. We got Membry this time. And this is where I mentioned at the start that you trust the system. It's not ideal that you're missing a bit of pace and that you're missing Max King, who's a match winner. But if the system stands up, the one soldier down, one soldier up, you're almost at a tipping point with injuries, almost. You've got to stop the bleeding on that front and slowly get a couple back. Look, having Paddy Dow available, you know, a week or so later is going to be useful in terms of midfield reinforcements. Clark would be maybe three away. Dougal Howard not far off. Jack Hayes not far off. So you just got to hang in there, find a way to get a result here. Got some tricky games ahead, but I think we're certainly capable. And, you know, it's good to have someone like Ross at the helm who will, you'd think, make the right decisions to set us up in the best possible way to give us every chance against an Essendon side that is dangerous. Clearly, they've got a lot of midfield options. I don't think they're sensational. I don't think they're necessarily better than the two sides we've played so far. But, you know, it's 50-50 or marginally our way and just find a way to get over the line.
Well, the situation that we go into this game is pretty similar to how we went in last year. I mean, the big difference now is that, you know, we're going in with a year's more experience into Owens and Filippo and Winhager and those guys. And you know, Darcy Wilson, who's come in, looks like a ready-made senior footballer. You know, so I think while the situation is similar, the baseline is further ahead of where we were same time last year. And we know what Ross was able to do from a coaching strategy performance perspective last year with the outs that we had, with the ins that we had, and the team that he had to trot out on the park each week for those first kind of, you know, 6 or 8 weeks or whatever it was, that he can make it work. The guy's just, I mean, he's a bit of a mad genius when it comes to that sort of thing, is that, you know, like you said, it's all about the team. And if the team buys in and if you're all on the same page and playing your role, then you can win regardless of the players that aren't out there, because the players who are there are all doing the things that they should be doing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You stare down the challenge and you see where it lands, and it'll be interesting playing them at Marvel and their home ground, or their home game, rather. Looking at some of our listener questions, I guess Mick asking the obvious one, any concerns around the progress of some of our injuries? Don't know about the progress, just more the severity of them, where it's been, you know, worst case scenario for most of them, and a lot of that's bad luck. You know, Liam Henry didn't even have the hamstring iced after the game on Thursday, and then it ends up being pretty severe. So whether that was mismanaged, I don't know.
The one that I've got an issue is the Crouch one. I mean, he was clearly not right. He hasn't been right for a while if you watched him play over the last couple of weeks. And so you just wonder, what could the club have done? Like, if you as an outsider can watch him running around and see that the guy's not right, why is he out there and why aren't they doing something about it? Like, why didn't they send him in for an arthroscope a month ago or 3 weeks ago or whatever, when it was clear that, you know, there's an issue with that knee? That's probably my biggest concern. The rest, you know, there's not a lot you can do about a knee. You know, Jack Hayes has not been on the park for a while, so it's different. Mason Wood, you know, contact injury and you know, concussion and that sort of stuff. A lot of these things are kind of, you know, collateral damage or contact stuff that no amount of training or whatever is going to change. But it's those things, the things that you can kind of see and visualize, you can see it happening almost in front of you, and you wonder, how does it get to the stage where all of a sudden, you know, a couple of days out from round three, we're sending guys for arthroscopes when it's been clear for weeks already that they're not right?
Yeah, and that's whether they were rushing it because they had too many others injured, I'm not so sure. Mm. But, yeah, clearly an issue in and – you know, that's come home to roost. And Bobba says, where to now for Crouch? Like, I think he's still got a role to play. But,
yeah,
we've just got to get him right. Tim.
He's been our best midfielder for the last couple of years.
Correct. That's right. And Tim says, looking at the 2019 list of 48 players, only 11 remain five seasons later. That's almost 80% gone. We've had a rebuild and the new place is looking fantastic. Do you think if we can look at this period like the 06-07 period and we have the awesome roller coaster ride ahead? Yeah, look, you look at drafting and, you know, I was having a bit of a look at it. These are the guys that debuted for us 2010, 11, 12 through that period. So Nick Hain played three games. Reece Stanley went to another club. Good player, though. Tom Lynch, ditto. Luke Miles, who? Daniel Archer played one
game. Won a
grand
final sprint, Luke Miles, I reckon.
Yeah. Alistair Smith played three games. Jamie Cripps, good player, but left. Will Johnson played one game. Aaron Sipos, 24 games. Nicholas Winmar played two. Tom Ledger, 12. Tom Simpkin, 20. Then you had guys like Sam Dunnell in there, Nathan Wright, Tom Lee, Josh Saunders, Brody Murdoch, Jackson Ferguson, Tom Curran, Cam Shenton. They were our debutants. The only standout amongst all of that was Seb Ross and Jack Nunes, who played quite a bit of footy. So then you compare that to, you know, our recent debutants with Filippo, King, Windhager, Owens, Wanganeen Miller, Wilson, those sorts of players. And it just shows you what happens when you get that right. It's simple as that, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the jab at Ross for not playing kids last time that he coached us. I mean, you go through that list and you sort of think, well, not me if I'm going to go, but did many of them pass the Ross Lyon test? That was probably where it came down to. Because if he doesn't like the way a player plays, they're not going to play. That's as simple as it is. He's seen things in these kids that we've got and gone, you are playing football. You are playing in this team and you're going to keep getting that opportunity until it's right. And I mean, we saw Mateus get a full season and he didn't do much wrong. That's for sure. I mean, he was still very wet behind the ears, but Ross said, you're going to play every game. You're going to get out there and show us what you can do. And that's just going to build the confidence and it's going to build the skill and it's going to build the him as part of the team. And he's done that multiple times with multiple players now when you look at it. So the young list that has been built by him in this one, as opposed to, I guess he could have tried it with the players that you listed off before. And chances are most of them wouldn't have got anywhere near what we've got right now. It's just a completely different list compared to what he had last time. We don't have that top level superstar or the superstars at that stage. It's a very much more even list and it's probably a lot fine. I guess they're finding it a lot easier to get into that team, hold their spot, but also blend into that team. They're not going to be just hidden away like I guess some of those other players were back then.
I love the odd pop culture reference and the movie The Club from the 1980. There's a scene in that which kind of reminds me of Ross Lyon maybe 10, 12 years ago where I think the president says to him, you wanted us to buy players, what's your problem? And he holds up that picture of Jeff Hayward saying, you're buying the wrong bloody ones. So I think that was probably the case then, that we were drafting the wrong kids and now we're drafting the right kids, so he'll pick them. So that's the difference at the end of the day. I mean, Jack Stephen and David Armitage got games back then. They were good pickups.
Yeah, Sam Gilbert, Ben McAvoy.
Yeah, correct. All debuting under him and went on to have a Jaron Geary debuted under Ross and played a lot of footy through that time as well.
All the Freo blokes, like half that Freo team.
Yeah,
Look at those guys. Brayshaw,
even like Adam Chera, who's not there anymore. Brayshaw, Caleb Sarong, maybe, unless he's too young, but he might have just tacked
too young.
On to
I think. Yeah,
too young. But yeah, there's certainly plenty through that period. I guess the final thought before we wrap things up, Nick, you had a question in regards, I think actually it's ironic because this week there's 1,000 examples of it, but you had a question around a segment that we do run.
I've got a couple of final thoughts, a bit of an argument, a bit of a blue on Twitter over the weekend, over the last couple of days with a listener who who said he's had enough of that Sosin Kilda and its pathetic loser mentality. And I just, I guess, wanted to raise it to the listening group. You know, are you sick of that Sosin Kilda? Do you like it? Do you hate it? You know, do you kind of see the ironic satire in it, or do you think it is kind of loser mentality? So maybe we'll put a poll out to the listeners. But what do you guys think?
I understand the question, and look, I get it that you can have that defeatist mentality sometimes, and look, St Kilda maybe have been guilty of that a bit in the past, or definitely have been guilty of that in the past. But I think there's also, you know, there's that black humour where you can laugh at things that you just suspect will happen. It doesn't mean that, oh, we're fucked and we'll lose or anything like that. You just kind of laugh at it. And, you know, I'm in a group with a bunch of other Saints fans, and we made the observation that you're riding high on Thursday thinking, how good's footy? Love it. Fantastic. And something has to happen the next day to make you feel like shit. It's just the nature of it. It's like, oh, Liam Henry's out, Mason Wood's out. Oh, Max King got suspended for something no one even saw. It's kind of that perception that you have that, you know, there's always a down not far from an up, and there's always an up not far from a down. So I think if it's taken for what it is, we're not sitting there going, this is why we'll never succeed. Mm-hmm. It's kind of just taking the piss out of the looming curse that just sits there in the background all the time.
It's a throwback to almost history when you look at it. It's like whenever something's possibly looked good, something's come along and changed that, or I don't think there'd be anything we've brought up in any of these that haven't been brought up by St Kilda fans in their own groups. And they're pretty much things that would have been discussed every minute up until we've actually talked about it on here. And it's, I guess you'd almost put it out, it's just common knowledge.
And the reality is that, you know, the Jam, by Friday evening, the Jam was squeezed out of the donut a little bit by some of that injury. And you're like, that shits me, because it should be a good day today, and frustrated about that, thinking about matchups. And, you know, that's no one's fault, but it's annoying. Yeah. And that is very much so St Kilda. So, yeah, look, I get the debate. I do. But, I think as long as people take it for what it is. I think what we just said there is so St Kilda, that what happens was that kind of poetry of the exact segment that we're talking about. That, you know, we were sitting here on a Tuesday night with fighting a Max King suspension that we didn't even know was going to happen. So, and it, and it makes a game that we were a very good chance of winning 50-50 probably. So, it's a reality, and it is annoying.
It is annoying. I do have one more final thought, and we've talked a little bit about perspectives and perception and all those sorts of things, and one of those things is that one that you guys brought up before about that perception that Ross Lyon never played the kids. There's another Ross Lyon perception that's out there, that is that he is this dour, defensive, hard to watch football coach. No one talks about the fact that his St Kilda team led the league in scoring at least one year, was top three or top four a couple of other years during that kind of 2008 to 11 period. No one talks about the fact that Champion Data had us rated the number one ball movement team last year, despite having half a year of what felt like pretty average football. And if you haven't watched St Kilda play, if you still think after the first couple of weeks and after the preseason, if you still think that St Kilda's a boring team because Ross Lyon's a boring coach, you haven't watched St Kilda, because this team is fun to watch. They are fun to watch. They're offensive. They're hard. They're tough. Excuse me. They move the ball quickly, they kick it long, they run, they do all the things that fun, entertaining teams do. And I think if you're still referring to Ross Lyon as a dour, boring, defensive coach, then you haven't watched his teams play for a while.
Yeah, and the two messages I got from neutrals on Thursday night, one was from a Carlton supporter and one was from a Melbourne supporter. And the Carlton supporter said, best transition team in the comp.
Mm-hmm.
And the Melbourne supporter said, far too quick for Collingwood tonight.
Yep.
So those two things don't ring true if you're boring.
Yeah. And
pointing from
and
back in that too, saying it for 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And back in that too, I mean, what is the old saying that I guess most people bring up all the time, that premiership team starts from the back line. It's, your defense is what's going to win your game. You're going to be the most attacking team in the world and give away more goals than what you kick. It's, if you got no defense, you're not going to win a game anyway. He's built that into the 9-10 teams, that defensive mindset. But it was, we had the ability to score at the same time. It was then when the team dropped down, we still might have had that ability to defend, but we didn't have that ability to score. And that's the first thing that fell away, the ability to score. And that's where I guess that came from, that whole, oh, he's just a defensive coach. No, we just couldn't kick goals. It was basically our only issue.
And so, this week is where we see that example of maybe you do pull the handbrake and change things up and try to win that way because that's what the situation calls for. But
yeah, when you've got weeks where you go, you need to tag a few more players than normal or shut down someone or that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, as I was saying, you can run off. I mean, Essendon kicked 101 points last week and lose by 5 goals.
Exactly.
That's attacking football.
Whereas we'll never lose if we kick 101 because of the way we defend. No. Never. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's the reality of it. But fingers crossed we can, I won't say grind because that's a negative word, but will our way to a result on Saturday against Essendon. A happy Easter to all of the listeners and hope you enjoy this podcast over the course of the week, the chat with Glenn Elliott and our chat that we posted during the week with Andrew Plimpton, the late president of the football club through the 90s. But enjoy the rest of the week, wherever you happen to be, and go Saints.